So when I'm thinking hustle, it's like...
So if I had to word association, activist hustle.
I think activism is just taking a stand.
People of color, minorities, existing as themselves fully and embracing the hell
you
out
don't,
of that.
You hustle to get something that, like, is not
I'm
on the road.
And not only that, everyone's struggling.
Hustle to me is getting shit done.
Always a light at the end of the tunnel.
I would just say action every day.
Great, we're fully back. Hi, Rachel.
Hey, Lena, how's it going?
Great. I'm so excited for this episode. Do you want to tell us a little bit about who we have talking today?
Yeah, so we have Raquel, Sofia, Sandoval, but I feel like most of her friends just call her Soph.
Yeah. it's so funny because I love... Well, actually, we'll let the listeners... hear about her a little bit, but one thing that stood out for me is that she's Colombian and living in Boston, and also just like the ownership of her introduction. I loved it because it took me a really long time to embrace my full name and to be able to tell people, like, I am Lena Cañón, as opposed to, like, you can say Cannon, which is just like really cool to have somebody on the show that I could like relate with to that extent.
Yeah, and I love her Instagram page. That's actually how we found out about her. And I thought it was two woke queen MDs to sound like two dope queens. But it's the number two. So this is so that people can find it on Instagram. At the number two, WOC queen MD and then S to make it plural.
And we'll have it on the description. Should we just jump into it? I'm so eager to have the listeners hear this episode.
Yeah, let's go for it.
Okay. So let's start off with you just telling us a little bit about yourself and anything that you want the listeners to know.
Okay. So my name is Raquel Sofia Sandoval. I was born in Cali, Colombia. I lived there until I was about 7. I then moved to Boise, Idaho, which was a huge change of scenery and just customs. And I was there through 5th grade. And then I moved to Houston, Texas, which was, again, kind of a culture shock, through high school. And then I went to Pittsburgh. Because I went to the University of Pittsburgh. I thought I was going to study chemistry. I ended up studying art. Ended up falling in love with a city that the first year there I absolutely hated. And so it was really interesting kind of to see this transformation. And Pittsburgh was definitely the place that kind of helped me blossom, I think, helped me develop kind of some of the values that I have or realize what mattered to me. And then it also kind of provided this really important and amazing ground to develop my skills and I think passion as an activist. And then I moved to Boston two years ago. To start medical school, and that has been an interesting total change of pace, and something that I've been thinking about a lot is this really interesting dichotomy almost, in the sense that I feel like I really expected to come to Boston and like really get to know kind of what Boston was about and who, like, what different communities made up Boston. And I thought that through medicine, I would get the chance to do that because you're essentially taking care of people who make up the communities. But it's been this really strange thing in which I haven't had as much access to kind of getting to know people and the issues that matter to them. And it's been more that I've had to like seek it out myself, and it hasn't been something that's been part of my education. and now being in the hospital full time, it's, I don't know, it's just super interesting that it's, I learn so much about people and I take care of people in such like a personal and individual basis, but then I still don't have that like common knowledge of what are the issues that matter to them or to where they're living that I expected and that I kind of am really fond of knowing and kind of helping fight in the fight with. So it's just, I don't know. It's been a whirlwind.
Quite the journey. So let's take it back a little bit and just back to when you spoke about the transformational experience that helped you shape your values and your skills. So what are the values that you're referring to and the skills that you're referring to when you say?
Yeah, no, definitely. I think one of the things that I'm most grounded in is kind of, I don't know if it sounds corny, but this like need to seek justice. And I think not justice for myself and the things that are so inherently tied to my identity, but I think also the things that are tied, but maybe not as closely. Like I'm thinking of like when we talk about systems of oppression and when we talk about some of the most marginalized groups, and I maybe like I am Latina, I'm an immigrant, but I'm also very white passing. And so there are definitely identities that I don't belong to, but I still feel this like inherent need to kind of be in the fight for justice with those groups too, because I just truly believe that unless those groups kind of have access and have retribution and justice, then it's an I won't also. And so that was kind of something that really was nourished being in Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh is a really black and white community. There are some pockets of Latinx people, but it's a city that for so many years and decades has been really segregated. And so there are a lot of issues that really impact the black community in Pittsburgh, especially these two neighborhoods called Homewood and Hill District. And the Hill District are kind of some of the neighborhoods that have been impacted the most. And even though there's been a lot of progress in the city of Pittsburgh and it's been voted like most livable city some years and like a bunch of stuff, that's great, but it's also a little bit of bullshit. And in my time there, like, those neighborhoods, particularly Homewood, became really near and dear to me and some of the work that I was a part of. And so that's kind of what I talk about when I think of kind of what nourished me and kind of helped me understand my values.
And when you talk about skills, what do you talk about?
Oh my goodness, it's hard now to kind of pull apart or tease apart kind of 2-3 years of my time there. Because in undergrad, I was part of a community-based research fellowship that I think maybe kind of was the start of this notion of how do you equitably partner with community organizations and think of doing projects together and work together. And I think the intentions were right from the start, but I also think that I was still really young and I think came in with the notion of like, oh, I have all these great ideas and I'm gonna really help, and then very quickly realized that there were a lot of problems in me thinking that. And so then in the following 2 years, I did just had more conversations and more experiences and ended up doing a fellowship, CORO fellowship, in public affairs in Pittsburgh. And through them really kind of tore down some of the notions that I had previously had and had to like from the ground up start to realize like, how do I want to engage with the system? Like, what can I contribute? But also kind of still hold true about these communities and hold just in these communities. And so then develop things like small things, but I think powerful things, like learning how to lead a meeting or learning how to kind of make sure that more voices are heard in the room, or if it was talking to like a local city government or things like that, or how to like bring stakeholders together in a room, and how do you push forward ideas. So come up with some, I think, nitty-gritty skills that I hope continue to serve me. But those are some of the things. And then silly things, like how do you make sure that a room of teenagers like listens to you? And oftentimes it's not that they listen to you, it's that they listen to each other.
I would say that's the least silly. I think that's like the most important for anyone.
Yeah.
So how did the skills or values lead to what two women of color Queen MDs came to be? Tell us a little bit about that.
So I came to Boston, came to Harvard thinking like, I'm going to jump straight into like all the things that are happening here with it, like bigger city, there must be more going on. It really quickly became so disillusioned. I don't necessarily think with the city itself, I just think with HMS, and particularly where the medical school is located, it kind of butts some of the predominantly Black neighborhoods in the city, and yet there's no interaction. And you live in this little bubble where all you see are people in scrubs, and you think that that's like the end of the world, or the end all be all of the world. And so just was really disappointed. And I then further, so I just kind of felt like I was getting further and further away from who I was and the things that matter to me. And then as I kind of went through this first year where we're mainly in the classroom and learning pretty much just like didactic type things, just astonished by how white and how male my professors were. And if they weren't, and to be fair there, we did have a good group of women. But again, it was just a lot of white women. And occasionally there'd be these just like such fierce and fabulous women of color. But not once did I ever see, a Latina, or someone who I could more closely identify with. And so it was pretty isolating. And then I tried to kind of seek out other people, to get to know, and just kind of, I thought like there has to be other Latinas in this area. And there are, but there also aren't. And they're not necessarily as accessible. And it's not, it was really shocking and really disappointing and really hard. I think I really thought back to what am I doing here? And like, how can I be here? I don't belong here. At the same time that all of this is happening, new students are coming to interview and meeting a couple Latinas and being asked, like, what's it like here? And just really struggling to not be totally honest and be like, no, it like kind of fucking sucks. I really felt that if I was experiencing this, other people had to as well. And other people with other kind of underrepresented identities within medicine. And so out of this came this idea of like, hey, let's kind of flip that and let's change the narrative of that. And let's try and kind of amplify some of these other voices in medicine, particularly women of color. And I had like Instagram is my love-hate thing. And
I think we all agree it is all of our love-hate thing.
It just like it's such a time suck, but at the same time, sometimes it provides like such good yeah, sometimes I walk away being like, oh, that's amazing. That kind of changes some of the things I'm thinking about. So all of this kind of led to the notion of two woke queens. And then thinking back, I guess, to Pittsburgh and some of these skills of like, okay, now there's this idea. How do we make it happen? How do we reach out to people? What's that kind of like that ask email type of thing? And then from there, it kind of started. And it's been incredible. It's just also been a lot more work than I ever expected. And that's kind of one of the hardest things. And I think something that's hard in activism is sometimes you're really energized at first and you really get the ball rolling. But then other things happen in life and sometimes it's really hard to keep momentum. And I think that's something that we all kind of have to really take a good hard look at and figure out how do we keep it going, but also in a way that sustains us, because it's such a marathon.
I love, I'm just like, everything you're saying, I'm like, yep. It's resonating. So I just want to take apart a little bit of everything that you just said. And I first want to start with, let's talk about that transition. Because you said that in the space that you found yourself in Boston, in having picked this path and kind of coming here, you found it like shocking, disappointing, and really hard. And I'm sitting here being like, you moved to Idaho. Like, that must have been shocking, disappointing, and hard. And then later you said, then, you know, you had another move to Texas. And I'm like, it was a huge culture shock coming from Columbia to Boston. But then when I think about, hold on, Texas is very different from Boston. Chicago is very different from Boston. And I think that sometimes only attribute culture shock or that, you know, like you expressing like shocking, disappointing, and hard as a thing that's like, well, that already happened to you. Like it happened once. Like how are you not used to constantly hitting the shocking and the disappointments? Like why were your expectations different? And why were you experiencing the same things if this is the move you're doing? So I would love to get your thoughts on that.
I think oftentimes when we talk about like progress that we have in our lives, I think we are often shocked and disappointed when similar things happen. And yet again, we're still engaging in the same behavior or thinking about the same things and kind of get super frustrated with ourselves. And that, of course, happens to me and happens to me when it comes to moving. But I think at the same time, I've definitely learned ways to kind of make it so that process of shock and disappointment lasts shorter and shorter each time I move or each time I go somewhere new.
And what are those? Like, what are the things that you have learned that you kind of implement now? Because I think one of the biggest things, and when you talked about it, you talked about it in a way of transformation. And a lot of our activist guests say this too, that in the beginning, when they were first hit with an issue that they were passionate about or that was their call to action, they had a longer time frame of coming to terms with the issue or like diving deep into learning about the issue. But how do you do that when it's happening over and over and over again?
Small and big things. I feel like so much of what I talk about are the small and big things. But I think I kind of take a moment for myself and I just remind myself that because of who I am and because I the way I go through the world, there will undoubtedly be a couple times, whether that is like a month or a year or whatever, where I am going to be really frustrated and I am going to say that I hate this thing, but that will pass. And I think nowadays I'm more aware of that and almost more embrace that so that it's not as much of a thing that I have to like think about or thing that I have to like wrestle with, but I just kind of accept that this is kind of where I'm working from within and that there will be a time where this will pass and that's fine. So I don't
like give as much energy to that. And I think that then leaves a lot of other energy that I can spend elsewhere. But then some other like concrete things is we are so quick to want to reinvent the wheel or so quick to want to come up with our own ideas. And I think there is in some ways some beauty to that. And this notion of like being really creative in that, that I think is really powerful. But I think it also just really gets away from kind of is, I think, isolating and also really gets away from built like that notion of building a movement versus kind of being solitary. And so then when I think of kind of moving to a new place and being confronted with some of these like shocking, hard, terrible barriers is really reaching out to some of the people who are there, who are doing the kind of things you're thinking about or the kind of things that you care about, and building allyship within that, or even just like, even if we may not be doing the same type of thing, if there's something within the work that you're doing or the way that you engage with the work that you're doing that I really find admirable or I find that could really benefit me, to just kind of experience as well, then reaching out to them and seeing what can I pull from their work into my work, where could we collaborate, where could we think about the same things and push forward on the same type of things. And I think that's something that I've just had to learn and that I learn really helps me, again, kind of save more energy. I don't know. I think also being a little bit more selfish with kind of where I spend my time and who I spend my time with, which is a little counterintuitive when you move somewhere new or when you're confronted with something new, you kind of you want to reach out to everyone, but I think you also have to keep in mind, like, what are the things that will nurture me the most and what are the things that will really build within what I want to do? And sometimes that means saying no to a lot of things, or sometimes that means, you know, not going to absolutely everything, and that's okay too.
And the being self-forgiving for that.
Yes, exactly.
Let's talk about being the first and like the burn, like the burden of the trailblazer or the burden of the groundbreaker. Or I personally feel like I haven't heard enough real just narratives of like, this is how hard it is to be the first. And like, I get why I'm doing it, but can we just for a second talk about it?
Oh. It's really interesting how that can be tied into so many aspects of an identity. Like it's not always just been because I'm Latina, but it's also taken on like other things. And I don't know if I would say anyone is harder than the other. I think they all come with their burden and they all come with, also to the success and the ability to be the representation. But it's so exhausting. And it's so exhausting, I think, in ways that if you are not part of that underrepresented group in that sense, it's really hard to kind of understand and wrap your head around. Because it's such small things like going to like a underrepresented in medicine cocktail or like a mentorship thing and looking around and seeing that people are able to make connections in such an easy and familiar way because they share something that's so inherent to them, and then seeing that you're kind of left alone in the room. Or that if you do find that one or two other people who relate to this one aspect of your identity, they don't relate to others. And so you feel like I have to connect with them and I have to make them my mentors or make them my friends. And then you realize though that you don't have much else in common. And so you're stuck in this place of, here I am asking for this, but not being sure if I want this. and it's really hard, and it's a burden, and or like a like something that just kind of like weighs you down sometimes.
We see a lot. I think right now on the news there is a lot of firsts, like this past election cycle. My goodness. You know, and all the time on social media, like we talked about, which is actually the third thing I want to bring up, but all the time I'm seeing first woman of color, you know, and then I'm seeing a lot of like, well, were they really the first, or are they just the first that are getting recognition? Because, you know, a lot of the things have been appropriated. A lot of marginalized groups, inventions, and successes have been appropriated. And so we never really got the recognition. And now that we're in a place where we do get the recognition, it's always in your face as a positive thing. But nobody's talking about how hard it is to infiltrate these spaces, to see yourself in a room full of white, you know, wealthy. Because let's be real, like that's the other thing, the medical field, although they wear you out, you're making a good amount of money, and are so disconnected from like the access that people who are in these groups don't get, and the healthcare that they get, and the struggles that they face, you know?
And the everyday reality. And I think one thing too that, and this is something that I personally struggle with so much, is, okay, now you're the first in this, or you're one of the few in this, but now you all of a sudden, you gotta be everything of that first. And it's something that I find myself on either side of the argument all of the time and being frustrated on either end. So if it's I see other people who hold some of my identities come into this space, and I'm so excited to have them, and I think I can share some of the burden, I can share some of the work, I can share some of the greatness, or the not greatness, the accessibility, the opportunities with you. And so I'm really excited, but then they have their own interests and their own things, and they don't necessarily want to do the same type of work. And now all of a sudden I'm disappointed or I'm frustrated. And then,
so are you trying to say that one person can't represent the complexity of all this? Is that what you're trying to say? So look, as the one Latina person in your field, you don't, it's not immediately passed on to all the other Latino
strange,
people,
right?
That are going to come in the field? How does that work?
Strange also too, that I've like fed into this narrative at times, and then I catch myself and I'm like, slow down. Like this is what you want. You want people here who have really different interests, but then it can be sometimes more hard both for me and for them, because all of a sudden it's, you still are the first, or you still have the burdens of the first, even though you're not the first, and you have others with you, but then there are still these expectations of you to continue to like lead, or to continue to take on all the responsibilities for this one subsection. And it's exhausting, and it creates divide.
Yes, and it's not only exhausting. One, it's unfair and unrealistic, which brings me to my third point, which is you choosing IG to be the way that you do activism. And I think that I would love to hear the train of thought behind that, because I do think that as a society right now, we are all so heavily dependent on what we see in social media. And most of us can shape our narratives, right? Like through social media, like we can describe who we want to be, or who we want people to perceive us to be. And I'm just wondering, how does like vulnerability and maintaining the like integrity of vulnerability while still having like a marketing plan? Because you said like, how do I bring the people? How do I get more followers? And like, while still doing that as a way of activism, because this is, you know, the platform that you have created, how has that been working out?
Oh, it's, I have so many thoughts. One is, I didn't realize how much strategic thinking would have to go into this. The goals from the start were really to hit on the point that representation matters, and making sure there was access, and that, and all of this, though, at the same time of keeping it real. because I think one of the things that gets me so down about Instagram is how easy it is to create this narrative that's not, that's false, or that is so beautiful and has all like the great filters and the great witty captions and the whatever. And I think that that is draining more than it oftentimes is uplifting. And so when we set out to do this, like we wanted to be as honest as we could be. And now being in it, sometimes there's this back and forth of like, if we are too real, or if we do talk about how down we are about things, like, are we turning people away? And are we disheartening people? And so it's really complicated. And then I think this newer thing that has started to happen for me especially is now that there are so many more expectations put on me for my time and for kind of the expectations of the way I should be learning and how far along I should be. Sometimes some of the things that I want to talk about and share my experience with on the account require a lot of time too, and a lot of thinking about how I want to do it. And then I don't have time, or then I get disillusioned, or I get anxious about now sharing, versus I really always wanted it to be just like easy and like from the heart and not another job and not another brand. And it's difficult. And now, like at first when we didn't really have that many followers, it just felt a little bit easier too to connect individually with them and to send a message to them and to like kind of build a community. And now it feels like it's much more of like a network, much more businessy, much more transactional, versus like a communal. And so it's been hard, and it's been hard to continue to post sometimes, because of that. And so now it's this bigger question of like, how do you keep the ball rolling, and what is next, and how do I keep being energized by this and hopefully energize others when I'm not feeling very energized?
And how do you hold the integrity of the idea in the first place? I mean, I have been, you know, once something takes off online, it just opens up for so many diverse experiences. And while all true, it's like it's really hard to maintain like a safe space for everyone while still trying to bring the whatever your particular mission is forward. So I do think that in itself, though, is activism, and especially activism in the time that we live in right now. And so my next question would be, so what are your hopes for the, let's just say 2019? So what are your things that you are working on this year and things that you're hoping to bring forth? In a way of change and in a way for yourself personally as well.
Yeah, I think one of these things is, and just talked about, but this notion of kind of how do I keep my energy up, and what are the things that are giving me more energy, whether it's like what being like, what am I reading, or what am I engaging with on social media, or am I engaging with social media? Who am I spending my time with? And just kind of realizing that, like, this need to be selfish and also self-forgiving that we talked about, and how does that all add up to me feeling like I can have more energy to take on more of the things that I really care about? And sometimes that means simply, like, I am such a newsletter junkie. I love signing up for a million newsletters of everywhere. And I'm also someone who I hate having unread emails. And so it's really tough, and it's such a fine balance. And so one of the things that I've been doing that I found really useful is going through and quickly glancing. And then if I'm maybe piqued, like maybe piqued my interest, or I think like, oh, that'd be cool to read, I add it to the reading list. And then once a week, I'll go through and like, it's been a couple days since I added this to my reading list. And if I'm still just as excited about learning that one thing or reading more about that thing, then I'll take the moment to read it. But that's just like such a small way that I've really found freeing and also able to still engage with new ideas and pushing my thought process forward. I think one of the things that in the next couple of years that I will really be faced to think about and think critically about is as I move forward within this clinical world, there are more demands on time. And I think that up until this year, even last year, first year as a medical student, I had a lot of luxury in being like, oh, I'm going to spend like this much time, like an hour learning medicine and 6 hours learning like all the other things, or how to create like movements, or going to this talk or going to this rally that I think really pushed my activism forward. And now I have to kind of rethink about how I engage with my activism. But the whole notion of like work hard, no, work smarter, not harder. For me, it's this notion of like, I still like, activism is one of my pillars or my foundational pillar. And so it's how do I keep engaging with it and how do I keep growing in that, even if my entire time is not spent in it. And so still unsure what that really looks like for me in 2019, but it's something that I'm thinking about and hoping that in the coming years I learn about what my activism can look like within medicine. And sometimes it just means showing up in with me and the identities that I hold to clinic or to this meeting or to whatever, and bringing forth the ideas that I have. But there's a part of me that wants more, to engage more with that. So still trying to figure out what that looks like.
I love it. Still in the journey. So how can people keep up with you in the work that you are doing?
So to what queens, even though I just said that I'm not posting as much, but I think this conversation and a couple of things that have happened recently really have me kind of feeling energized again to engage with that space. So I think that's a way, that's the way I'm putting forth, if that makes sense. And then I think that will also to hold me accountable, to share within that, and to not keep so isolated sometimes too.
Yay. I love it. I love it. Awesome. Anything else that you want to share that you feel like we didn't touch upon today?
I think I'm just so grateful that, I'm so grateful to have had this chance to speak. I'm so excited. I'm such a huge fan of all the work you guys have been doing. And I'm also really happy that we got the chance to talk about this notion of the first and the expectations of being the first, and the burdens. And one thing that I did, and we probably did touch, but I think is still being stuck with me, and that I'm thinking about a lot, is that there oftentimes comes in being like the first of, or in being within this group, I've often found that other people sometimes really love to run with it and really highlight it and really give, like speaking for myself, give me the attention, and whether it's like inviting me to speak at something or to go to something or highlighting me in some article. And something that is such a fine line, and I don't know yet if I've kind of reasoned my way to it or found truly how I feel about it, is there's this notion of I'm so excited to be highlighted for my work. And I'm so excited to have the opportunity to share what I'm doing and to kind of be the representation. But then there's this notion that I'm always thinking about of like, whether it's like, why me, and what about other people who are doing even greater work, or what about like highlighting some of the other narratives within the Latina community in medicine, or what about some of my other peers who are also engaging in activism, and what is it about me? Which I think now as I'm like thinking through this, which is like hard, because does that mean like, am I putting my work down? I don't know. But also, like, is there something about my narrative that's more palatable, or that's more easy for some of these institutions to kind of highlight? And is that then like a showcasing a false sense of kind of how willing they are to change, or how, I don't know if any of that really makes sense. But.
Oh my gosh, it all absolutely makes sense, because it goes to the whole, okay, how do I honor that, yes, I am doing something amazing, and that, yes, I am the first. And again, being the person who's like, I'm going to bring these narratives to life. I'm the, you know, trailblazer. But at the same time, there should be more people like me, and I am not the only story. Like you said, like the struggles of like, I came here with the expectation that I'd be working for my community, and like, I'm seeing nobody from my community, and none of them want to know the community, and none of them understand the issues, you know, and like, and all these things. I then think about my mom, and like little things like, oh my gosh, I'm working from home. My mom doesn't know what that is. She never had the privilege. And like, that in itself is like a little thing that I'm like, oh my gosh. My children will know what working from home is from like birth, and they won't have to, you know, it's just like this crazy, weird time that we are living in of having our struggles not be like so in our face that we're dying, and they're more like systemic. And the progress also not being in our face, like we're liberated. They're also taking a really long time, and it's cultural. Like it's like shifting all these little culture norms. That, yeah, I had no follow up thought to that one.
I think one thing that I've just been shocked by is we talk about cultural change as this behemoth. And it is, like, don't get me wrong. But I also, like, culture is made up of so many subcultures that are also equally as behemoth. And so it's sometimes paralyzing. Like, I've been doing some work with kind of how do you talk about microaggressions within the clinical setting, and how do you talk about them, and how do you offer support for people going through them, and how do you institute policies to kind of like deal with them essentially. And I've been so floored by how much of this work is inherently tied up into the culture of medicine, and how to get at this thing that I'm interested in, there has to be a cultural shift of medicine as a whole, and how impossible that seems. And how deeply rooted it is in so many systems that date back like centuries, and how it's this little microcosm of this huger thing that we're dealing with. And sometimes it just, yeah, it's the and and the and and the and in it. So that was one. And then something else that you said about thinking of your mom, one of the small victories that I have of like sustaining for myself and like is just taking a moment to go to the gym when I can. And it's just like my one time where I can like listen to music and not think about anything. And it's just so liberating. And I was at the gym, this was like 2 weekends ago, and I wanted to go when it like first opened. But it was like raining or something. And so I was like huddled underneath waiting for them to open. And I see this couple, and they looked Latinx, and they this was on Harvard's like the main campus, and one of the gyms is right in front of this like really weird sculpture. Like, I don't know what the sculpture represents. I have no clue. But I saw this couple go up to it, and they were holding an umbrella, and she stepped out of the umbrella and was like getting soaked, but was standing near the sculpture, and he was taking a picture, like old school pictures. Like, I don't know if I'm describing it or if you can really, but I feel like it's something that like I've seen happen so many times. Like, my family has done it, or I've grown up around it, where like you go on these vacations to these places that seem holy or that seems so important, but you have no direct connection to them, but they are so important and they mean so much, and you understand that they mean so much, but don't really can go further because of like your own experience and your own relation to it. And it was just this moment where I saw them and they felt like they were on Harvard's campus, and Harvard is this like holy grail of a thing, and they see this statue and they don't know what it means, but they figure that because it's in a place like this, it must be important. And now I'm here and I want to take a picture next to it, and I want to capture this, and I'm going to go back home and I'm going to share it, and my community will have no idea, but will also feel so proud and so excited in that moment because it's Harvard. And all of this, seeing all of this and thinking of all of this, kind of gave me a moment of just like, wow, like I am at a place that was so far away for so long to everyone in my family and everyone in my community, and to now like be there and have it be that much closer and that much more accessible. Yeah, and it gave me that like moment of solace, or it re-energized me to then be like, you know what? Like, I can put up with some of the bullshit of being the first. And yes, the burden is hell, but also like I have this moment and I can walk away from this moment, and like I will have kids who will have a picture and will have a way to relate to this. Yeah, I don't know. It was just something that you said really like hit me and made me think back to that moment. And it's a moment that I think that I think back to a lot because it's so small, so silly, but means so much.
And not only that, but like even as I want our listeners to like hear that even as you're coming to terms with this moment, it is a moment. And then the next moment might be, But how do I, at the same time, while trying to embrace the like gratefulness and the feelings that this has brought on, also stay true to the things that are still holding this access back? Like, it's too hard to try to continue building things on the house when we haven't acknowledged that the foundation is rotten and that we can't keep building or changing or redecorating or adding until we freaking like unearth it all and then start from scratch again. So I really appreciate this talk with you today.
Oh my God, me too.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Sophia, for joining us. We appreciate you. Wow. So I know I say that every time, but this one really, really hit home. Just because it resonated so much with my personal story. And I think like two things that I want to point out that really stuck with me was, one, the immigrant journey and the assimilation to different places in the United States. I think that is underrated. Like, that experience is so underrated. Like, people, yes, like anybody moving to a foreign country is different, is difficult, and navigating a new culture, learning a new language, having no support system. But I think nobody really tells you that like that culture shock also happens within that country. So having Raquel Sofia tell us about like the different places where she lived and the difference different experiences that she had in Idaho and Pittsburgh and in Boston resonates so much with me, because I too, you know, came here and lived in Massachusetts and was like, this is what the U.S. is like. And then I got to travel to the South and I was like, oh, that's not the whole U.S. And then you get to travel to like the West Coast and you're like, wait, people here are very different. And then you go to the Midwest and you're like, what is happening? This country is so complex. And you can't just kind of like categorize everyone or generalize everyone into one American category, which is a whole different discussion. But just the assimilation into those different places really stuck with me. And then the second thing is just like that resonating conversation about being the first, which we talked about with Lior and Eyal. It's like, oh, here we are in these spaces, knowing that we carry both the burden of being the advocate, but also having to have the experience of being the only one, really, really resonated with me. So this one was very personal for me, including, you know, having her be from Colombia and like absolutely understanding our culture and the hardships that we go through trying to assimilate here and try to advocate for people who might not necessarily relate to us. It's a lot.
It was really cool for me, even as a listener, to be able to hear you, Lena, and Raquel Sofia talk about your experiences and be super authentic and relating to each other in that way. And what resonated with me is a lot of we actually have had the privilege to kind of get to know her outside of just recording for the podcast, because she's been super supportive of our work. And she mentioned it briefly, but I know that she's done a lot of work with Harvard Medical School in kind of reforming their medical education and coming up with trainings and workshopping some coursework about racial inequities and microaggressions in healthcare, especially between like providers and patients, and even within healthcare professionals as a whole. So it really resonated with me as someone going into the health field. I mean, I literally am becoming a midwife to address the disparities that we see in, especially among Black women and their rates of maternal morbidity and mortality, regardless of class, being the worst in this country. So I'd love to also have a chance to talk about that a little bit more.
I think we should definitely do that. I think there's a lot of complexities that go to our healthcare system and the different levels of care, depending on what groups you are part of and you identify with. And I would love to have our deep dive episode focus more on that. I also just want to leave the listener, you know, resonating with a couple of other things that Sophia said. One, like the sentence where she said, I don't want to reinvent the wheel. Like that realization has come up a couple times. And I want to challenge our listeners to start. I know you and I do a really good job at pointing out these themes, but I hope that our listeners are also on their own finding themes that keep coming up for them when they listen. And I would just love to hear from them about that. So,
yeah, let us know. What are you taking away?
Awesome. So tune in next time for our reflection episode. And I think we can leave it here.
And we're going to take a moment to thank everybody who made this podcast possible, starting with you, the listener. Without you, there would be no us. I'd also like to thank the Activist Hustle team, starting with Rachel Sullivan, your producer and director, Aaron Taylor, our producer and editor, Brandon Rush, our creator, Amina Chandani for your creative logos and constant creative input, The Yard for lending us your space to record, and a final shout out to Blueprint Leadership. If this episode has at all inspired you to take action, remember, we have support for you. Blueprint is a leadership program made by young activists for young activists. Check out blueprintldc.com/services and see how we can support you on your activist hustle.